Imagine a world just plunged into darkness every evening. You know, your favorite cartoons just vanish, the fridge goes silent. What is that invisible power that lights everything up?
It's something we totally take for granted.
Definitely. So today, we're doing a deep dive into this really great chapter all about electricity. Mm. We're looking at its circuits, its components, basically everything.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal here is to really boil it down for you, recap the whole chapter, hit the most important stuff, help you grasp those core ideas quickly, you know, without feeling totally overwhelmed.
Yeah, and it's interesting how the chapter walks you through it. Starts with the absolute basic, like, what even is electricity? Where does it come from?
Right.
Then it moves into how we actually harness it, and crucially, how we control it. It's about getting both the what and the how.
Okay, so let's get into it. We'll explore first electricity just all around us in the world, then how we use things like cells and bulbs to harness it, and finally how we manage the flow circuit switches and those diagrams.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, first big idea then. Electricity in our world. The chapter really nails it by calling electricity the silent workhorse of modern society.
That's a great phrase for it.
Isn't it? I mean, just think about it. Charging your phone, lighting your house, running hospitals, factories, even the metro trains.
Yeah.
It's just everywhere.
And it didn't just appear overnight. What's fascinating is tracing that history back. The chapter takes you from the ancient Greeks noticing static with amber.
Wow, yeah.
All the way to Benjamin Franklin and his famous kite experiment in 1752, proving lightning was electrical. Big step.
Huge.
Then you get Alessandro Volta in 1800 with the first proper battery, giving a steady current. That opened the door for Michael Faraday's work on electromagnetism.
Okay.
Which ultimately led to Thomas Edison and the practical light bulb we all recognize. These people really unlocked the secrets piece by piece.
So what is it then, this invisible force? The chapter breaks it down pretty well. It's a form of energy, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Comes from charged particles like electrons. Mm-hmm. And it's super versatile. You can easily turn it into light, heat, sound, motion.
So versatile. And where does it originate?
Well, the chapter covers the big picture, like the power grid stuff.
Yeah.
Thermal plants burning fuel, hydro plants using water, wind turbines, solar panels.
The large-scale generation.
Exactly. But then there are the portable sources, too, which are just as important for everyday life.
Which brings up a really practical point. How do we power things when we're not plugged into the wall? You know, for torches, remotes, phones.
Right.
And that's where electric cells and batteries come in. They're essentially chemical energy converters. Stored chemical energy gets turned directly into electrical energy. Super useful.
Okay, and then it gets really interesting when the chapter talks about how electricity travels safely.
Yeah.
It mentions conductors and insulators.
Yeah, this is absolutely key. It sounds simple, but the difference is critical. Conductors are materials that let electric current flow through them easily.
Like metals. Copper, silver.
Exactly. Copper, silver, aluminum, iron, even graphite, salt water. And us, the human body. They have electrons that are free to move around.
Okay, so they conduct. What about insulators?
Insulators are the opposite. Think plastic, rubber, glass, dry wood, air. Their electrons are held really tightly so they don't move easily and current can't flow.
I see.
And you need both. Conductors make the path for the electricity and insulators stop it from going where you don't want it to go. That's the safety aspect.
Which the chapter really hammers home. It says, you know, always use cells or batteries for experiments. Never, ever the main supply from the wall socket that's high voltage, dangerous stuff.
Absolutely crucial.
And never touch switches or appliances with wet hands. Water makes things more conductive.
Including you. Remember, your body conducts electricity. Water just makes it easier.
Good point. You know, speaking of power, did you know a single lightning bolt has enough energy to power a 100-watt bulb for like 3 months?
Wow, that's incredible. Really puts it in perspective.
Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And the chapter busts some myths, too. Like, electricity isn't made in the socket. It's made at power plants and just delivered there.
Right. The socket is just the access point.
And it's not just for big things.
Yeah.
Tiny things like watches and remotes need it, too.
Mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
Okay. So moving on from the big picture. Section 2 gets into how we actually harness this energy for lights, for devices.
Right. Starting with the basic unit. The electric cell.
The cell, yeah. It converts that stored chemical energy into electrical energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it has those two ends, right? The positive terminal.
Usually that little metal cap that sticks out.
Yeah, and the negative terminal, the flat metal base.
And essentially what's happening inside is chemical reactions are building up charge. When you connect those terminals with a wire or through a device,
like putting in a torch.
Exactly. You create a path, and then electrons flow from the negative end through the torch bulb to the positive end. That flow is the electric current powering the light.
Simple but clever. Mm. But sometimes one cell isn't enough power, right? That's where batteries come in.
Precisely. A battery is technically two or more cells connected together, usually in what's called a series connection.
Series. Okay, how does that work?
You connect the positive terminal of the first cell to the negative terminal of the second cell, and so on.
Linking them up.
Yeah, and the effect is that their voltages add up. So if you have two 1.5-volt cells, connecting them in series gives you a 3-volt battery. More power.
Gotcha. And I suppose connecting them the wrong way around would be a problem.
Oh, absolutely. The chapter points this out. If you put them in backwards, the battery might not work at all, or you'll get much less power. That's why battery holders are designed to make sure you put them in the right way.
Makes sense.
So.
Okay, so that's power sources. What about using that power for light? The chapter talks about the old incandescent lamps.
Right, the classic bulb with the wire inside. That wire is called the filament. It's usually made of tungsten, coiled up really thin.
And it glows because it gets hot.
Exactly. When the current flows through that thin filament, its resistance makes it heat up incredibly hot, white hot, and that heat produces light.
And if that filament breaks, poof, no more light.
That's when we say the bulb is fused or burnt out. The path for the current is broken.
But we don't use those much anymore, do we? It's all about LEDs now.
Well, LEDs, light-emitting diodes, are definitely taking over, and for good reason. The chapter explains they work totally differently. No filament.
No filament. So what makes the light?
They have two leads, or terminals, a longer one, which is positive, the anode, and a shorter negative one, the cathode. Inside, there's a semiconductor chip.
Okay.
When current flows through that chip in the correct direction, it emits light directly. It's a process called electroluminescence.
Wow. And they're way more efficient, right?
Hugely efficient. The chapter mentions they convert something like over 80% of the electrical energy into light. An incandescent bulb, maybe 10%. The rest is just wasted as heat.
80% versus 10. That's a massive difference.
Yeah.
And they last longer, too.
Much, much longer. So, yeah, better for your wallet and the environment.
Interesting little fact here. The term battery. Apparently, Benjamin Franklin coined it. He was talking about connected charged glass plates and compared them to a battery of cannons.
Huh, I didn't know that. Like lining them up?
Yeah. And the first LED that actually produced visible light, a red one, was developed back in 1962.
Still relatively recent in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. The chapter also clears up a couple of things, like cells don't create electrons. They just act like a pump.
Pushing the electrons that are already in the wires and components around the circuit.
Right. And in a regular bulb, it's the super hot filament making the light, not the glass bulb itself.
Good clarifications.
Okay, final section. We've got the power. We know how to make light. Now, how do we actually control it? This is where circuits, switches, and diagrams come in.
The practical application side.
So for any electrical device to work, the chapter says you need a complete unbroken path for the current. And that path is called an electric circuit.
Yep. And the key distinction the chapter makes is between a closed circuit and an open circuit.
Closed and open. What's the difference?
A closed circuit is complete, continuous, no breaks. Current can flow all the way around, so your lamp glows, your motor spins, whatever.
Look at the on state, basically.
Pretty much. An open circuit means there is a break somewhere in that path. Could be a loose wire, a switch turned off, that broken filament we talked about.
So the path is interrupted.
Exactly. And if the path is broken, current cannot flow. So the device doesn't work. It's off. Understanding that is like step one for figuring out why something isn't working.
Makes sense. Now, about the direction of flow, the chapter mentions something a bit weird. We usually say current flows from positive to negative, right?
That's the conventional current direction, yes. Mm. It's a historical convention we still use for analyzing circuits, from positive through the device back to negative. But in reality, the charge carriers in metal wires are electrons, which are negatively charged. So they actually move from the negative terminal, push through the circuit and are attracted to the positive terminal.
So the real flow is the opposite of the convention.
In terms of electron movement, yes. But for designing and analyzing circuits, sticking to the conventional positive to negative flow works perfectly well. It's just something to be aware of.
Especially for LEDs, right?
Right.
You mentioned they have a positive and negative lead.
Exactly. That's a case where direction really matters. An LED only works if current flows through it in the intended direction, positive lead, connected towards the positive side of the battery.
So even if the circuit is closed, if you put the LED in backwards,
it won't light up. It basically blocks the current in the reverse direction. Polarity matters.
Got it. Okay, so how do we make those breaks? How do we turn things on and off easily?
With a switch, an electric switch. Seems simple, but it's fundamental.
It just opens or closes the circuit.
That's exactly it. It's a device designed to either complete the circuit, provide a continuous conducting path when it's ON, or break the circuit, create a gap when it's OFF.
How does it break it?
Usually by creating an air gap. When you flip the switch off, it moves the conductor away, leaving a space filled with air. Air is a good insulator.
Ah, so it stops the flow.
Stops it dead. The switches in your house work on exactly that principle, just maybe a bit more complex inside.
Clever. Now, drawing circuits with actual pictures of batteries and bulbs would get messy fast.
Oh, incredibly tedious. Imagine drawing a complex circuit like that.
Yeah. So the chapter introduces circuit diagrams using standard symbols.
And this is huge. Using standard symbols is like having a universal language for electricity.
Why is that so useful?
Well, several reasons. Simplicity symbols are much quicker to draw than pictures. Clarity, everyone knows what each symbol means. Universality, an engineer in Japan can understand a diagram drawn in Brazil. And it makes analyzing the circuit, understanding how it works, and troubleshooting problems much, much easier. It's a visual shorthand.
So what are some common symbols the chapter shows?
You'll see one for the electric cell, that long line for positive, short, thick line for negative.
Right.
A battery is just several of those cell symbols linked together. A basic lamp is often a circle with a cross inside.
Okay.
The LED symbol looks a bit like a triangle pointing against an arrow, often with little arrows indicating light emission. And crucially, it shows the direction, the polarity.
Ah, that's important.
Very. And you'll see symbols for switches, usually showing if they are open or closed or N. And just simple straight lines represent the connecting wires.
Cool. And one last misconception the chapter tackles.
Mm-hmm.
Electricity doesn't get used up in the bulb, does it?
That's a really important one. No, it doesn't. Think of it like water in pipes.
Yeah.
Water flows all the way around. It doesn't disappear in the radiator.
Good analogy.
Similarly, the electric charge, the electrons, flows through the lamp and continues around the whole circuit back to the cell or battery. What is used up, or rather converted, is the electrical energy the cell provides. The lamp converts that energy into light and heat.
So the energy changes form, but the charge keeps flowing as long as the circuit is complete.
Precisely. You need that complete loop for anything to happen.
Wow. Okay. That was a really thorough deep dive. We've covered so much how electricity is everywhere, the history, the generation.
Both big scale and portable power from cells and batteries.
The vital roles of conductors and insulators for making it work safely.
Mm-hmm. And we shone a light, so to speak, on how cells and batteries actually function, compared the old incandescent bulbs with the super efficient LEDs.
Right, and clarified how circuits need to be complete, how switches control the flow, and how those diagrams give us a universal language.
It really covers the essentials for understanding how we control and use electricity.
So for you listening, what does this all mean? Hopefully the next time you plug something in or flick a switch or even, see lightning.
Which is just static electricity on a massive scale.
Exactly. You'll have a much better feel for that invisible force shaping our world.
Yeah.
You basically got the core knowledge from this chapter now.
You're equipped to understand the basics of how these everyday devices function electrically.
So here's something to think about as you go about your day interacting with all these power devices. How might our constantly evolving understanding of electricity and circuit design keep changing things?
Yeah, thinking about the future.
Making our homes, our cities, maybe even ourselves more connected, more efficient. Where does it go next?